So I want to read from the book of Nehemiah. Oh, to Nehemiah. Nehemiah, for those who are not familiar with the story or the book, Nehemiah was a cupbearer for King Artaxerxes at the end of the 70 years of exile that the Lord imposed upon the Israelites for their bad behavior. And at the end of that 70 years comes the story of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is in a place of influence. He's in a place of power. He is the cupbearer to the king. He has privilege. He has rank. He has money. And right at this period, some Jews have returned to Jerusalem and have rebuilt the temple. And it's at this moment that the temple has been rebuilt that we read the start of Nehemiah. So I want to start in chapter 1. In verse 1, here are the memoirs of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In late autumn, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa. Hanani, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about the Jews who had returned there from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. They said to me, "Things are not going well for those who return to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down and the gates have been destroyed by fire." When I heard this, I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. Then I said, and we can skip through that, and go to chapter 2, verse 1. Early in the spring, following spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before appeared sad in his presence, so the king asked me, "Why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled." Then I was terrified, but I replied, "Long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire." The king asked, "Well, how can I help you?" With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, "If it please the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried." Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked, "How long will you be gone? When will you return?" After I told him how long I would be gone, the king agreed to my request. It goes on further to say that Nehemiah then went back to Jerusalem, helped rebuild the wall. And at the end, when the wall was complete, they held a series of events in Jerusalem where they retaught the law, they retaught the scriptures, they brought out the scrolls, they taught about the Sabbath and God's requirements on the people, the requirements upon the Levites, and so forth and so forth, and Jerusalem was restored. And I think there are some lessons we can pull from Nehemiah that directly relate to our marriages. And I know that there are some brainiac Bible people out here who are going, "Yes, okay. Where in Nehemiah does it ever say the word marriage? Or even wife, for that matter?" I will confess, nowhere. So if you're asking me, how can you pull something out of Nehemiah, some interpretation, I will go with this. What is the greatest parallel of in Scripture of a man and a wife? Christ and the church. Christ and his relationship with the church. Christ's relationship with the church is a direct parallel of what? God's relationship and love for Israel. God's love for his people. God's love for the nation of Israel. God's love for the Jews. And in that sense also, God's love for Jerusalem, which was the center of the nation. And in Nehemiah, you will find throughout that whole book, through Nehemiah, the reflection of God's love for his people and for his city. So it is not hard to stretch then that through Nehemiah's actions, through his words, you see God's love for his people is also a direct parallel of the relationship between a man and a wife. So let's pull some thoughts here. The first one is, how much value do you put on your marriage? Where do you put priority to? Where is it on your priority scale? How much do you value your marriage and the state of marriage. Nehemiah's value that he placed on Jerusalem was great. When he heard the state that Jerusalem was, he wept, he fasted, he mourned, he prayed, and he had put so much value on Jerusalem and seen it restored that he was willing to give up his position of power and influence. He was willing to move. He was willing to go back and change his whole life. So great was the value he put on Jerusalem and the restoration of Israel. And my question then to you is do you hold such value for your marriage? Are you willing to change your life for your marriage? Are you willing to change the way you live? Are you willing to give up your own rights? Like Nehemiah did, he gave up what was his privilege, influence, position. He was willing to sacrifice all of it because Jerusalem held a higher value. I will stand and proclaim that marriage, your marriage, should hold a higher value than your own personal gain in the world. It should hold a higher value than your own fame, your own position at work, your own ambitions. Where on the priority scale of value in your life do you put your marriage? Where do you put it? Jesus said, when telling the story of a man who finds a treasure, so great is that treasure that he sells everything he has and buys the field so that he can acquire that treasure. Your marriage is a treasure. It is a treasure and a gift from God. It is a pearl of price that you cannot even imagine. It holds more weight and more value than all the money you can gain, all the status you can put on. You can have all the really impressive titles in the world. It will not compare to the great gift that is your marriage. And in this culture, we forget. We put it to the side. This culture, there is something about it. It is inbred in it. It seeps into our pores. We breathe it in. It comes in through every commercial, every TV show. It comes in through every book that you read. It comes through every conversation you have at work. It comes in everywhere. Our culture is saturated with the marriage is not as important as how high you can get in your position at work. It is not important as getting the right house with the right vehicles, putting on the right face, having on the right clothes, having the right status, the right image. All of that is more important. And when all of that is complete, maybe then you should take some time and spend it with your wife, only if your boss lets you have an extra week or two off because you've attained that after 15 years of putting in time. What? You want to go home and spend time with your wife and family? You mean this job, staying till 7:30, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, is not as important as you going home to spend with your wife? Reject. That is our culture. Our culture says you should take every money, penny you get and spend it on yourself. Get the next car. Get the Xbox 360. Get the bigger TV. Get all these things. Accumulate them because somehow the value of your wealth and your position and your power is somehow going to translate into a happy wife and a happy marriage. And oh my goodness, if I wish that was true, but it is not. Am I the only person in this room that has seen people that have acquired a great many things and attained great status and power in the world and have the worst marriages and be some of the most unhappy people in the world? Am I the only person that has seen some people, some Christians who are poor, some who are struggling in their work and with finances, but they have invested the value of their marriage and they are some of the happiest people you will ever meet? Content and happy. And not to say they are mutually exclusive. That is not truth. I'm not trying to say that. What I am trying to say is, where do you put your value? To what lengths, to what effort are you willing to go to place the value and priority into your marriage? Because your marriage has value. Great value. Like me and Nehemiah, Are you willing to put value into your marriage? The second point is this. We must have a willingness to work. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 6 says, "At last we finally completed the wall up to half of its height because the people had a mind to work." A willingness, a doggedness, a determination, and a darn good attitude to work on your marriage, to work at it hard. Be diligent about your work. Be dogged about it. Wake up with a good attitude about working on your marriage. Not waking up, oh, I got to go to work again. Having a mind to work. Proverbs says this in chapter 3. "The soul of the sluggard desires much and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent will be made fat." I have seen many people who look at other people's marriages and go, "Wow, I wish my marriage was like that." And they are some just lazy. Well, what are you doing about it? Nothing. Are you going to sit and look at others? You desire a good marriage. You want intimacy with your wife. You want intimacy with your husband. You want your husbands to interact and engage and connect emotionally with you. Men, you want your wives to open up and let you have sex more than once every second month. You want that. Great. What are you doing about it? Are you working? Are you working on your marriage? Are you working on your relationship? Are you working on it? Are you dogged about it? Are you diligent about it? Or are you the sluggard that looks and desires much but does nothing and therefore has nothing? But those who work hard, who are diligent, will have much. That truth is in marriage. And the Israelites built the wall to half of its height because they had a mind to work. We must work on our marriage. The road to the mountain of myrrh takes effort. Finally, I'm getting some chuckles out of that one. Arranging to play bingo with your wife takes time and effort. Getting some more chuckles. You cannot climb the palm tree without a little effort. You must work on your marriage. You got to put effort and diligence. You must place value and you must work on it. The last one, or not the last one, I'll go with the third one because I have a fourth, is we must be willing to fight for our marriage. We must be willing to defend it. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 17 says this, is that when the wall was now half to its height and the enemies of Israel were starting to realize that this was becoming a threat. And so they started threatening and planning to attack the Israelites. And chapter 4, verse 17 says, "And then the leaders and the people, in one hand they had their shovels and tools to build, and in their other hand they had a sword. They were both willing to work and they were willing to fight. They were willing to defend the wall that they were building." It says also that at no point during the work was the man not have a sword either in his hand or a spear on his back, willing to fight for the marriage. It is my opinion that there is a force in this world, there is a force in this culture that wants to see marriages destroyed. The walls that you are building to protect your marriage, there are forces that are against that. Is there anyone here who would stand and tell me that the culture of this age is not trying to attack the institute of marriage? Trying to change it, manipulate it, alter it, corrupt it, twist it, bend it. The Bible says that the enemy has come to do what? To steal, to kill, and destroy. It is marriages that God has instituted to build his church. It is marriages. And it is marriages that the enemy wants to attack. And what are you defending your marriage from? Lust, pride, complacency, bitterness, anger, jealousy, mistrust, an unwillingness to forgive, an unwillingness to give and sacrifice, the pride of life, those forces that come in and tell you that your wife should be doing more for you and it's all about you. Those forces that would come and tell you, you know what, open marriages, that's a fine thing. That's okay. Swinger lifestyle, don't worry about it. It'll strengthen your marriage. Divorce, that's fine. It's normal. Don't worry about it. Everyone goes through it. You're tired and you don't want to work on it, don't worry about it. Just give up. That's normal. Just end it. Everyone does it. Start again. Hit the reset button. There are forces against marriage, and we must be willing to stand and fight for our marriage. That means when you wake up in the morning and you are having a disagreement with your spouse, you must be willing to fight for your marriage. That means when you see something or someone or anything attacking your spouse, you must be willing to fight for your spouse. You must be willing to stand for truth, stand for righteousness. It means you must be willing to proclaim what is right and not just bow your head and go, well, maybe they have a point. No! I will fight for what is right. I will fight for truth. I will fight for my spouse. I will fight for my marriage. I will defend it with my life. We must be willing to fight for our marriages like the Israelites fought to defend the walls they were building. We are building our marriages. And we must be willing to build and we must be willing to fight. Why? Because we place such great value in it, because we see the intrinsic work of the Lord in our lives and its goodness and its rightness. And it is pure and holy. And we must be willing to be doggedly willing to build and to fight. And my last point is this. The walls were built to protect the temple. The temple was the presence of the Lord. Let the Lord be the center of your relationship. Let Christ be the anchor and the foundation of all that you build. Protect with a jealous rage the presence of the Lord in your marriage. Protect it with your life. Work as hard as required. Do not let it slack. Do not let it fall away. Do not become apathetic about the Lord being the center of your marriage. It is crucial. It is everything. The presence of the Lord, the temple of God in and around the Israelites. Maybe I'll get the musicians to come up.